And with the 7th pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select Josh Allen.
Josh Allen. Not, as you can tell, the quarterback that Alex and I would have selected, but I can say I've spent the last, what is it, 10 days trying to talk myself into him, and I'm starting to get there, but I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, so when we're sitting there in the draft, you see the Bills trade up to 7, and you know the quarterback's first name's going to be Josh, and that pause between the first and the last name just felt like an eternity. And now, if you're familiar with Nate and I in the podcast here the last few weeks, we were really hoping it was Rosen, and it wasn't. Nate told us not to freak out. I did freak out a little bit, Nate, I'm not going to lie. I was a little upset at first, but like you said, over the past 10 days, we're recording this May 5th now, I'm starting to talk myself into Josh Allen a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if you go and watch a lot of his tape, which in the lead up to the draft, I didn't watch a ton of Josh Allen tape. I watched a little bit. I watched the Senior Bowl stuff. I watched some stuff, some of it's just him throwing in the drills in the Senior Bowl especially. And that's where I just kind of was like, I have no idea what to expect from this guy. And that's why I didn't like him as much. The one drill that always stood out to me at the Senior Bowl was when it was him and Baker Mayfield throwing like a 15-yard just 3-step drop, 15-yard pass into a target, and Baker Mayfield hits it right dead center, and Josh Allen throws like 20 yards too high or too far. Like that's what like sealed the deal for me on his accuracy issues. But watching his tape over the last 10 days, you can see a lot of his accuracy issues, I think, can be fixed, and that's because they seem to be more in his footwork than in his actual throwing motion, which is, in my opinion, way way easier to fix.
Yeah. So I think maybe we were trying to confirm some of our priors there with Josh Allen in our lead up to the draft. And I think maybe we were a little bit harsh and unfair to them, and I'm not just saying that because he's a Buffalo Bill now. I did watch a decent amount of clips and tape of Josh Allen's senior year over the last 10 days, and you're right. I think, you know, a lot of times when we say guys are inaccurate, it's just kind of an inherent thing where they just can't spot the ball consistently where they need to. But watching the tape, Josh Allen's actually pretty accurate when he gets his feet, steps into the throw, gets his hips aligned with his shoulders where he's trying to throw the ball. He's really accurate when he does that. Where we see those inaccuracies is where, you know, he gets a little bit uncomfortable shuffling his feet to his left side or forwards in the pocket. He's pretty good moving to his right. That probably comes from the baseball background. But like you said, a lot of it is footwork, and I think a lot of it is his hips, too. If you watch the really disastrous and accurate throws, is when his hips are just completely going a different direction from his shoulders. And if you know anything about throwing a football or a baseball, that's a big no-no.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like you said, his accuracy, if everything goes right for him and he doesn't get too pressured in the pocket, he can step up, read the field, which he's actually pretty good at doing. Again, if he's not under pressure, he's pretty accurate. It's just he has happy feet a lot, especially when he gets pressured. And I don't know how much of that is because of what was in front of him at Wyoming this past year, and just and how much of that is a habit he has. Because that's another thing you have to at least consider when you're analyzing him, is his team was really, really bad.
Yeah. And that's one of the first things that jumps out to you, other than his arm strength of the tape, is how bad those receivers are. They run routes poorly, they don't get separation, they don't catch the ball. I mean, it's really hard to gauge how good a guy is when the players around him are that bad. And, you know, a lot of times, Nate, you and I talk about, you know, good quarterbacks often come from smaller schools where they have to elevate the play of the people around them. Those guys were just not good, and I don't know how much you can elevate the play of people around you when the talent's just not there.
Yeah, and you did get to see some of that 2 years ago when Wyoming had a bunch of guys that actually ended up in the NFL, and he looked more comfortable 2 years ago than this past season, and I think that's certainly part of it. But there are certain things that really jump out at you when you watch the tape. My favorite thing about him, I think, is his ability to make something out of nothing. He plays his style of play. He's always trying to make something happen, and that sometimes can be a disaster. As you see when you watch the tape, he'll be like rolling out to his left or trying to move and make it just a ridiculously embarrassing throw. But he tries to make stuff happen, and that mentality is what I like. I don't know if it's like the outcome and the execution, but I really, really like that mentality.
Yeah, that's one of those things where coaching is really vital to teach him good decision making with that mentality. You know, he tends to try to make up for things with his arm a little bit too much. I'd like to see him, you know, set his feet and have good mechanics and deliver the ball. Or it's okay to tuck and run or throw the ball away sometimes. And I think if he can learn those things and, you know, learn to read through progressions under pressure, I think he's going to be a really good quarterback. But like we said, there is a wide range of outcomes here with Josh Allen. There's a lot of uncertainty. So I just find it interesting that this is the hill that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott want to die on here, is Josh Allen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm very... just the way they had been building the roster prior to this and the way they had been drafting and signing free agents, they weren't signing a ton of, signing or drafting a ton of guys that couldn't immediately contribute and, you know, step out into the field and be NFL players week one. And I don't think Josh Allen is there. I mean, maybe he is, but he's even if you think he can play week one, he is so far from his ceiling that he's going to need a lot of work.
Right. And I don't know if it's as bad as people think with him not being ready. You know, some people are saying sit him 2 years. I don't know if that's necessary now after I've watched some tape. You know, there's certainly some, you know, kind of kinks in his mechanics and stuff that's going to be need to be fixed before you put him out there on the field. And I don't know. Brandon Bean said if he wins the job, he's going to start. Even if he is better than A.J. McCarron, wouldn't you rather kind of strip down those mechanics, rebuild them, let him get the reps in practice before you kind of throw him into the fire behind what we expect to be a kind of crappy offensive line?
I would think they'd want to do that, but, I mean, they're obviously not going to paint themselves into a corner and say right now that Josh Allen's not going to start week one. They're going to I'm assuming they're going to leave it open until as close as they can get to the first game of the season, but I still would be very, very surprised if Josh Allen is the week one starter. Even though, if you look at the betting lines, he is the quarterback with the highest number of games, the rookie quarterback with the highest number of games are projected to start this year. His over-under for starts is 10.5, which is way higher than I would have thought it would have been. But at the same time, I guess it makes sense because I could see him playing week six.
Yeah, especially if we look at the Bills' schedule. They play 5 of their first 7 games on the road. There's a decent chance that the season could start really poorly, but I hope that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott don't listen to fans clamoring for Josh Allen if the Bills start 2-5 or worse, you know what I mean? It's just, don't put the guy out there until he's ready. Don't make the same mistake you did with Nathan Peterman, throwing him to the wolves when he's clearly not ready. But, I mean, if he is ready, by all means, do it.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think the opposite of that applies too. If the Bills are 5-2 and they're in the playoff hunt, and you think Josh Allen's ready to play in the 8th game of the season, put him in the 8th game of the season. You don't keep playing AJ McCarron because you're winning. If he's ready, he's ready, and you draft him to be your franchise quarterback. So when you think he's ready, no matter where you are in the season, he should be on the field.
Yeah, that's one of those things that was kind of interesting with the Kansas City Chiefs this past season is, by all accounts, in that last game of the season, it looked like Patrick Mahomes was ready. And if he gave them a better chance to win than Alex Smith, then why was he on the bench? I mean, I don't necessarily know if that's true, but it certainly plays to your point, Nate. If Josh Allen gives you the best chance to win, even if you're doing well, then put him in the game.
Yeah, I think Andy Reid like had some loyalty to Alex Smith or something, because after watching Mahomes play in Week 17 and then watching Alex Smith play in the playoffs, like I don't understand why Mahomes wasn't the quarterback towards the end. Like, probably immediately after the Bills game, I would have thought they would have gone to Mahomes because of how poorly Alex Smith was playing. But they stuck it out with him, and they just tailspun into the end of the season in the playoffs.
All right, so before we move on to the next draft pick, I do want to talk about Josh Allen – what the Bills had to give up to get up to 7. You know, we said in our pre-draft podcast, if the Bills are confident in a guy, then you have to go get him, you know? There's no price that's too high for that. With that being said, do you think they overpaid for Josh Allen? And if they did, is it worth it, you know, given what we said before the draft?
So, I don't think they overpaid. And at the same time, I can't tell you if it's worth it right now. I mean, I think you have to think about it as, you know, they got their guy, it's worth it. I think that's how the Bills are thinking about it. I don't think that's how the fans are thinking about it necessarily. But I'm glad they didn't give up 22 to do it. He gave, what was it, 12, 53, and 65 to go up? Or was no, 12, 53, and 56,
correct,
right? To go up to 7? Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily too much. It's overpaying by the trade value chart, obviously, but it's not, I don't think, unreasonable. I think it would have been unreasonable if they gave up, like, 12, 22, 53, and 56, because that would have been way overpaying.
Right, and then I think on the draft value chart there, I believe what they gave up was valued at about the 3rd or 4th overall pick. And, Nate, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott confirmed that Josh Allen was the top guy on their board, which I find interesting, because even if you have to lie, wouldn't you say that's the top guy on your board, if that's the guy you drafted?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd say at least it was the top quarterback on your board. I can't believe he was the top guy on their board, because they're probably, I think, like 3 to 4 guys that are better than all the quarterbacks in this draft. But yeah, you would think they'd say he was the top quarterback on our board if you're going to spend this capital to go get him. And if he wasn't, I mean, we'll never find this out, but I'd be super curious to know who else they liked.
Nate, I've seen a lot of reports that Baker Mayfield was the top guy, regardless of position, on a lot of teams' boards, which I think is interesting. You know, that was my top quarterback, but it was kind of intriguing how teams kept that silent for a long time.
Yeah, it is. And I think part of it is that the teams don't want to give away what they're thinking at all. And if they do, like, they're going to tell you the opposite of what they're thinking. So a lot of the stuff you hear leading up to the draft is just one team trying to get a guy to drop or something by saying that, like, another guy or saying something bad about him. That's what I'm almost positive that the Josh Allen texts were leaked by a team that wanted him. Like, that makes more sense to me than them being leaked by a team that didn't want him or by someone that was trying to hurt. Like, it makes sense that if you want him and you can't get up, you don't want to pay to get up, you're going to maybe see if you can get him to fall a little bit.
Nate, so now that you brought up the tweets, I just want to get my thoughts in here of just how stupid that whole thing is. Are we really going to crucify a guy for something he said when he was a teenager? Granted, I will say this, it is poor awareness by Josh Allen, especially his agent, to not remove those tweets or just completely just deactivate that account before the draft. You have to know there's probably, with kids these ages coming into the league, you have to know with social media that there's probably some stuff in their past that they said that, you know, they wouldn't want people to see now. It's just a bit irritating to me that they didn't think to kind of cover their tracks with that.
Yeah, it is a little weird that no one thought about it. I'm sure Josh Allen probably barely even remembered half of those tweets. Because I can tell you right now, I have no idea what I put on, like, Facebook when I was 15, 16 years old. I have absolutely no idea. But, yeah, I completely agree with you on the fact that it's just so... For it to even be a controversy, like, the way it was, I understand they came out, he was in the wrong, but he was 15, so you have to consider the maturity of a 15-year-old, and that... I understand that he publicly apologized. I expect him to publicly apologize in the Bills locker room. And like he said, he's going to get up in front of the team the first day they're all together and apologize for him. That's fine. But the fact that it was such a big controversy, like, oh, you shouldn't draft this kid because of that, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's one of the things that drives me nuts about sports is, oh, he's a locker room issue or he says things that are problematic. That's such BS. If the guy's talented enough, then he belongs on your team.
Yeah, it's very rare, honestly, that someone is such a toxic player that they make the locker room a difficult place to be. It's so rare that those kind of players actually happen. And you know, a lot of times when they do, they're not even one of the good players, and you can just usually jettison them. And, like, the guys that are really good and they know they're really good, they're not going to be toxic in the locker room.
Right. So we could talk about Josh Allen all day. But the bottom line is, it wasn't our top choice, but he's the Bills quarterback now. And, you know, we've got to root for him and hope that the coaching staff develops him and, you know, we don't throw him into the fire too early if he's not ready. So I want to move on to the Bills trading back up to 16 to get Tremaine Edmonds. What did you think of that pick, Nate?
I loved that pick. I didn't honestly think he'd be available then. Like, I was very surprised he made it out of even the top 12. Like, I would have thought even if the Bills stayed at 12, there was a chance they wouldn't have been able to get him. And the fact that they were able to get him at 16 is, like, that's crazy value. And he can play all three linebacker positions. He can play middle linebacker. He's got the size for that. He's got the speed to play weak side linebacker. He's a good enough run stopper to play on the strong side. He can do really everything across linebacker positions. I kind of expect him to probably start at middle linebacker this year, seeing what else, considering what else the Bills have. But he's probably just going to be, like, a three-down linebacker and start at middle linebacker and also be out there in the nickel package. That's where I see him playing, but he's just a crazy athlete who can do so many things so well. I really liked that pick for the Bills.
Yeah, Nate, I don't even know if did we mention Tremaine Edmonds at all in our, you know, pre-draft pods. I don't think we did, and it wasn't because he's not a great player. It's because, like you said, we did not think he was going to be there. And, you know, I've watched some of the tape since they drafted him, and it's insane. The guy just turned 20 years old this week, and just being able to run a 4.53 or 4.55, whatever it was, at over 250 pounds is just insane. The guy's a monster. And like you said, he's going to be an every down linebacker. You have to have him on the field. He's really versatile. And, you know, in the NFL today, teams are in nickel about 60% of the time. So, I mean, him and Milano out there in a nickel package is going to give you a lot of leeway to do some things you want to on passing downs. Because those are two really athletic linebackers. You have a good secondary, and you've really improved the front four in the offseason. So I think he's almost one of the final pieces, like major pieces of this defense to turn it from, you know, mediocre last year to hopefully really good.
Yeah, I think what they did with their defensive picks from rounds 2 through 5, right? They picked, or yeah, 2 through 5, they went defense. And all those guys, They have one thing in common, all four of those guys. They're crazy athletic for their positions. And you see what they're trying to do on defense. And I think he thinks that after this defensive draft, if all these guys pan out the way they want them to, they're going to be pretty much where they want to be as a defense. Except for maybe the one thing they could maybe add in the offseason next year is another pass rusher. But they're really set up pretty well for going forward on defense.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they can do. And just looking at Tremaine Edmonds when, you know, they announced that selection, you see him walk up on the stage. If you didn't know anything about the game tape or anything, and you just put all those guys that were drafted in the first round on a stage together, I'm probably going to point at Tremaine Edmonds and say, yeah, I want that guy.
Yeah, it's not often that you can be 6'5", 260 pounds like he is and move the way he moves. It's actually insane, which is... And if the Bills want him to stay 260, that's, I think, he's going to play middle linebacker. They could also, I think, ask him to lose 15 or 20 pounds and let him play outside and run all over the field. And there's just so many options for what they can do with him, given his athletic ability combined with his football smarts and his size.
Yeah, so the Bills gave up all of their second-round picks and 65 to get those two guys. So we didn't see the Bills pick till almost the end of day 2 with pick 96, and I could not believe that Harrison Phillips was still on the board at that point. You know, he was probably a mid second round talent, I would think, on most teams' boards. And at that point, if a guy is that high on your board and still there, you have to take him regardless of need, I think.
Yeah, and he is a Buffalo Bill. You look at him and it just screams Buffalo. And everyone, no, I don't want to say everyone, but a lot of people on like Twitter and Facebook compare him to Kyle Williams. But like, really the only things that you can compare about them are that they're big white dudes with beards. But yeah, they don't play the same position. So people that are saying he's going to be the next Kyle Williams. I mean, he could be the next Kyle Williams in terms of impact in Buffalo, but they don't play the same position. So that's one thing I think that's going to be interesting. I mean, McDermott does rotate his defensive line like crazy. I think one guy last year played more than half the snaps on defensive line. That was Kyle Williams. So with the way they rotate, I see him and like Star Little A splitting time essentially this year.
Yeah, Sean McDermott did say that Phillips, he sees him as a one tech. And, you know, that's kind of more the run-stuffing role where Kyle Williams is the push the pocket and, you know, free up some of the other pass rushers type of roles, the three tech. And I don't know, I just find that a bit interesting if you're going to pay Star Lotulelei $10 million a year and you're kind of committed to him for 3 years. You just drafted a guy that might be just as good as him, we don't know yet, but I'm just interested to see what happens with Star going forwards. I mean, if Harrison Phillips turns out to be a really good one tech, what are you paying Star Lotulelei $10 million a year for?
So I kind of think about what the Buccaneers did in this draft as a decent comparison. It's not like exactly the same comparison, but look at who the Buccaneers picked in the first round. They picked Vita Vea, right? The tackle from Washington. Who's the best player on the Buccaneers right now on their defense?
Gerald McCoy.
And they play the same position. Vita Vea can play the one and three decently well. He can play both of them decently well, but he's better at the same position that Gerald McCoy plays. And I think you can never have too many guys in your defensive line that are really good athletes. And because of the way you have to rotate your defensive line, I mean, most guys on the line are not going to play more than, you know, 60% of the snaps on any given weekend.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense when you frame it that way, Nate. I just think it's going to create an interesting, you know, player personnel challenge in a couple of years if Harrison Phillips turns out to be a stud. I mean, the guy, I think he had over 100 tackles as a defensive tackle last year. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. And that's one thing that I do agree with you on that, is you can't pay two guys on at the same position on the defensive line $10 million. You can't pay them both, right? So I'm not saying Harrison Phillips is going to be worth $10 million a year in a few years, but imagine if he commands like a $7 to $8 million a year contract. I don't think you can pay him and Lotulelei if they play the same position. Then you're essentially paying like $16 million for 100% of the snaps at one position on the field, and that is, in my opinion, overpaying, unless you have like J.J. Watt or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were paying Marcell Dareus to play that role. So hopefully they can figure that out going forwards, but I am excited to see Harrison Phillips, you know, work in that rotation, and it's going to be annoying hearing all the comparisons to Kyle Williams, even though, like you said, they have nothing in common other than they're both big white dudes, so... Hopefully the commentators don't kind of run that into the ground. So I'm going to move on to the next pick. Is it Tehran or Taron Johnson from what?
Taron Johnson, yeah, from Weber State. And I think we could probably talk about these guys together, the next two guys, Taron Johnson and then Cyron Neal. Going back-to-back picks with a secondary in rounds 4 and 5, when the Bills had, by all accounts, a pretty good secondary last year. So a lot of people questioned that. But I think I see what they were doing, I guess I could say. I'm not sure if I agree with it yet, but I see what they were trying to do.
Yeah, that's one thing where I don't think that criticism is warranted at all, Nate. We saw how bad the depth was at cornerback for the Bills last year after E.J. Gaines and Tre'Davious White. So in the NFL today, you need to have at least three good corners on your roster. And it's even better if you have four or five. And I think this really helps address that terrible lack of depth they had. And, you know, we can definitely... Is it Johnson or Neal? I'm confusing them. Which one is going to play nickel most likely?
I think Taron Johnson's probably... He might not start the year as a nickel corner. That could be Phillip Gaines. I mean, with the way they acquired him in offseason to do that, basically. But, I mean, if he wins the job, but I see him long-term, like middle of the season, Taron Johnson is going to be the nickel corner. He's a very, very good zone defender, and he's super physical. And he tackles well, which are all things Sean McDermott likes to have in his defensive backs.
Right. And one thing Sean McDermott does know really well is both linebackers and cornerbacks. So I just don't know why anyone would question these picks, given the lack of depth there and the fact that Sean McDermott has a pretty good track record of both drafting corners and developing guys from nothing into something. I mean, look at Josh Norman.
Exactly. He turned Josh Norman into a superstar, and then when he left, Sean McDermott was not even close to the same player.
Yeah, and like you said, Nate, this really helps address the depth, and you know, if these guys shake out, the Bills' defense is pretty much close to set. You know, they could probably use another linebacker next year in free agency or the draft, but I really like the way the defense is looking going into this year. And so that brings me to the number 166 pick of Wyatt Teller, which a lot of people are raving about. Tell, you know, the listeners why they should be excited about Wyatt Teller.
Wyatt Teller is an animal, I guess, is the best way to put it. You watch his tape, he mauls people. And I see him being a plug-and-play guy at the left guard position where Richie Incognito was last year. I don't necessarily know how good he's going to be at first. He does need some work, but he only gave up 4 sacks in all of his college career. His entire college career, he gave up 4 sacks. And I see him playing not all the snaps at left guard to start the season, but a decent amount of them. And he can also play multiple positions on the offensive line, which is good for him in the terms of getting snaps, but he is just an absolute animal. If you get to watch some tape of the things he did in college and the way he just destroyed people, I definitely recommend going out and doing that.
Yeah, he is one mean offensive lineman, and that's something you gotta love, especially if the Bills still want to stick with that run first offense, or really just if even as a pass protector too. I mean, only giving up 4 sacks in your entire college career is pretty impressive. And as we know, you know, if you've listened to the pod before, Nate and I just rail on the Bills' offensive line in terms of pass protection. I think a lot of the guys on the roster do a good job, you know, run blocking. But, I mean, the pass protection's been pitiful. So, I mean, if you can get, Wyatt Teller is a good run blocker and a guy that's, you know, at least decent in pass protection, that's all you can ask for from an interior lineman.
Yeah, I actually really liked what the Bills did overall in the fifth round. I thought outside of the first round, which Tremaine Edmonds is probably my favorite pick of the draft, but I like both these fifth round guys. I think the Bills did a really, really good job getting value in the fifth round, and I'm really excited to see what these guys do. Especially the guy I'm actually most excited about, at least in terms of his potential of what he can do that we didn't get to talk about as much earlier, is Cyron Neal, because the reason I like him so much is he can play safety, corner, linebacker, and he's an unbelievable athlete. He ran a 4.5 40 at the combine and had a 10-foot broad jump and a 40.5-inch vertical, and he's just unbelievably athletic. And I think he's like 6'1", 210 or 205, but he could be a special player if he develops the way that McDermott probably wants and expects him to, and he's going to be a very unique player on the defense.
Yeah, Nate, we've said it before, you know, McDermott loves versatile guys on defense, and you know, he's a big guy too. Like you said, 6'1", 210 is pretty decent size for a corner, and you know, he's a good tackler, and you know, you can move him all over the field, which is just something that makes defense a lot easier for both the players out on the field and the defensive coordinator calling the plays. So I'm excited to see him too. One thing people did get upset about is that the Bills didn't address wide receiver until round 6. What were your thoughts on that? And then tell me what you think of Ray-Ray McCloud.
Well, first, I would have liked to see them address wide receiver earlier in the draft. However, they obviously had a plan. They executed their plan the way they wanted to execute it, and they got 2 wide receivers at the end of the draft, and I guess you can maybe hope one of these guys shakes out, but it's not very often you get a 6th or 7th round wide receiver who ends up being good in the NFL. The one thing, the Bills' history is, I guess, good for this, because their best wide receiver for probably 4 straight seasons was a 7th round pick. I think it was like 08 to 11, maybe, or when was Stevie Johnson the number one receiver?
That sounds about right, somewhere in that time frame.
Yeah, he had like 3 1,000-yard seasons in a row, so we'll see. But I guess Ray-Ray McCloud is going to be the Brandon Tate for the Bills. That's the role he's going to play this year. He's going to return kicks, probably not get too many snaps at wide receiver unless there's a ton of injuries. But He's a very good returner. He's pretty good on special teams. I see that being his long-term role in the NFL. I mean, I can't ever see him developing into any type of an NFL wide receiver. I mean, I guess his ceiling, and this is his absolute ceiling for me, is like a Dexter McCluster type player. Austin Prohl, though, I think has some real potential. He's going to be on the practice squad this season, I think, I would guess. But he has great hands. He runs really, really good routes. And he's a guy who, if he develops exactly how the Bills want him to develop, could turn into like a Wes Welker type player. Probably not as good as Wes Welker, but that kind of a role. So I think he has way more potential than Ray McCloud.
Right. So I'm okay with both of the picks, where they selected them. I think that's, you know, all you can ask out of 6th and 7th round wide receivers is they're just projects. The one thing I will say is I think Deion Kane went at 185, two picks before the Bills. That's a guy I liked, you know, before the draft. And, you know, if you're the Bills sitting there, you know, maybe like pick 175, 180, and Deion Kane's still on the board and you haven't addressed wide receiver yet, it just doesn't make sense to me to not give up. What would you need to give up? Your 187, maybe a 7th round pick this year or next year to go get Deion Kane. That's something I would have preferred to Ray McCloud, just because Kane has more potential as a wide receiver on the outside, and that's something I think the Bills really lack, is a decent receiver opposite of Calvin Benjamin, because I don't think Zay Jones is an outside receiver. The Bills keep trying to plug him in there, and I just don't think he can get the separation on the outside. I think he's terrific in the slot. It just doesn't, what they did does not make sense to me, given they have Zay Jones on their roster.
Yeah, one thing that I was actually really disappointed in is that I heard today that the Bills really liked Equanimeous St. Brown from Notre Dame, and they thought they were going to be able to get him in the 7th round, and then the Packers got him. Yeah, the Packers got him in the 6th round, like 207th overall. And that's, if they really liked him that much, why are you not picking, like, you really, that's the one thing I guess that's frustrating me a little bit. You really think Ray McCloud is going to be a better NFL player than Equanimeous St. Brown? I mean, the potential differences is just astounding to me. So that was the one thing that I was kind of confused by, especially when I heard that today, that they really did like him.
Right. And, you know, we say if you like a guy, go get him, especially that late in the draft. I mean, what's the cost of moving up? Next to nothing? You swap picks and give up a 7th round pick. You know, that's such a low cost to get a guy that you really like. And another guy that was there too, I think until round 7, was Marcel Adamon, who we've mentioned on the pod, is a guy that would be a really good day 3 pick, and it just, I don't know, it doesn't make sense why they drafted the guys they did, considering who they have on the roster. It just doesn't make a lot of sense from a roster building perspective to me.
You know, I completely agree. I think Adamon and St. Brown both would have been better fits for what the Bills need than either of the receivers they drafted. Mainly because St. Brown and Adamon are both like 6'5", 220 pounds. And I think the Bills needed, and still need, another bigger receiver to play on the outside. Because, like you said, I don't think Zay Jones can be outside. I think that's not using him to his fullest potential.
Right. So before we wrap up the pot, Nate, I do want to talk about a couple of undrafted free agents. And first, I just want to mention how important undrafted free agents are to roster building. In 2016, the Seattle Seahawks had 24 of their 53-man roster on opening day were undrafted free agents. And, you know, for an organization that's had sustained success over the better part of a decade, I wish more teams would follow that model. There's a ton of value in undrafted free agents. And with that being said, there's two guys that the Bills picked up as undrafted free agents that I really, really like. And the first is cornerback Levi Wallace from Alabama. And then also wide receiver from Alabama, Robert Foster.
So I really like the Robert Foster signing. That was probably my favorite signing the Bills made, because he's a guy who I can see developing into an NFL contributor. He has all of the physical tools that you need to be an NFL receiver.
Yeah, he has elite NFL speed too. I believe he ran a 4.40 or a 4.41 at the combine.
Yeah, so he's that's something the Bills really – they need a deep threat. They truly need a deep threat that can run by guys. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, I guess, is a deep threat in the sense that if he gets one-on-one, he can just kind of throw it up there and he'll go get it. But he's not a deep threat in the way Sammy Watkins was a deep threat.
Yeah, and then Levi Wallace, he was a walk-on at Alabama that became a starter. I think that's a good early sleeper to make the roster for an undrafted free agent guy. That's someone I could see, you know, the Bills saying, all right, we'll keep him on the 53 man as a project instead of putting him on the practice squad for someone else to take away from us. You know, maybe they cut a guy like Philip Gaines if the other two draft picks and Neal and Johnson work out well. I mean, I don't know. I really like that signing.
Yeah, I do too. I would be very, very surprised if both Philip Gaines and Breon Borders make the 53-man roster. I would be surprised if they both make it. I think Philip Gaines is more likely to make it than Breon Borders. So I guess I'll say right now that if Breon Borders is on the 53, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, so as we're going to take a few weeks off here before we come back with a pod. We'll wait till we get some, you know, off-season mini-camp stuff going on. And then, you know, we'll really dive into what's now the 90-man roster for the Buffalo Bills and, you know, what we can expect going into training camp. And we'll probably break it up into offense for one pod and defense for another. For the time being, if you're new to the podcast, thanks for listening. And if you're a subscriber, also thanks for listening. If you like the show, go ahead and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We'd also appreciate it if you give us a rating, because that helps other people find the show. And, you know, if you like the show, tell a friend about it. You know, pass us along to someone else so we can keep growing the community. We'd appreciate it.
I think Alex said it all right there. We definitely appreciate all the listeners we've been getting, and we are excited to keep growing with you guys and having a good time doing this.
All right, so you can check us out on Twitter @Bills_Breakdown and Facebook @BillsBreakdown. If you have any ideas for future pods or segments, stuff you want us to talk about going forwards, feel free to write us at either of those places or at BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. I'm your co-host, Alex Pallinger.
And I'm Nate Schreiber. We will let you guys know on Twitter when we're going to be doing the next pod. Like Alex, that'll be the next couple of weeks, but we will make sure to let everyone know when we're going to release the next one. So, as always, thanks you guys for listening. We will see you next time.